Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's a big privilege and perk of this job to get to talk to people who are doing incredibly important work to make our country fulfill its earliest promise. Last week, we were joined on Friday by Representative Jim Clyburn to honor the celebration of Black excellence that the White House had. This week, it is my privilege to be joined by Dr. Deetra Trent, Executive Director of the White House's Initiative on Historically Black Colleges and Universities. And the White House is hosting HBCU Week because the Biden-Harris administration has announced another over $1 billion investment, which makes it, frankly, record-breaking, topping $16 billion, now $17 billion under the Biden-Harris administration in invested dollars in HBCUs. Welcome, Dr. Trent. Why does this matter so much?
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. It matters because our students matter, and this administration is investing in the future of our country. This president has always said that an investment in HBCUs is an investment in America's future. We know that HBCUs are producers of some of the greatest talent especially the greatest Black talent in the country. We can see that by our many examples. The vice president herself, HBCUs educate over 80% of the federal judges who are Black federal judges today are HBCU graduates. Over 80%, 70% of doctors and dentists are HBCU graduates. And so when we talk about investing in HBCUs, we really are talking about investing in our future. 40% of Blacks in STEM graduated from an HBCU. So we are talking about diversifying our country's workforce in order that we can continue to outcompete and out-innovate other countries. It is necessary for us to invest in these schools.
I was blessed to attend majority minority, as the old nomenclature was, high school, and watched so many of my talented colleagues go on to education at HBCUs, which it was wonderful to hear from them as they progressed in their careers. They are some of the Black doctors and dentists and engineers that I know and celebrate, and I'm so privileged to be friends with today. One of the things that I think is really incredible is that this level of investment has never been seen before, and that it is so critical in this moment. Dr. Trent, this continues the legacy of the Biden-Harris administration investing in Black communities and Black young people of promise. And the results that come from HBCUs outstrip the Ivy Leagues, do they not?
They absolutely do outstrip the Ivy Leagues, especially when it comes to African Americans coming from low income families. 75% of HBCUs students are Pell eligible, which means they are low income. Over 50% are first generation. And HBCUs have historically done a much better job with educating and getting these students to completion than any other school, any other universities in the country. So these are very special places. I am that student. Mm. I went to an HBCU. I was on a Pell Grant. I was first generation. And so I'm an example of what an HBCU can do for students who come from low-income families and students who wouldn't necessarily have that opportunity at other predominantly white institutions. And so, it is absolutely important that we continue to invest.
I want to ask you one last question. I began today's show by listening to some of actor John Leguizamo's speech yesterday at the Emmys, and he spoke very specifically to the power and importance of representation. I can think of probably no more important place than in a classroom, in a learning and teaching environment, for Black students to have, the right, the opportunity to be taught by Black professors. How critical is that for a young Black student, Dr. Trent? And then I'd like you to just give us some last thoughts on, again, the Biden-Harris administration's legacy of their commitment to Black and brown folks in this country.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that anytime you are able, I'm going to talk from my experience at Hampton. When I was a student, we saw Black excellence all over the place. We had the likes of Jesse Jackson and some of the civil rights figures on campus talking to us. And not only that, it's just through our professors. And so when we see that kind of excellence, we become that, right? And it's in an environment where it is appreciated and it is celebrated, and that we don't have to make excuses. And so this administration has done a great job understanding that and investing in that. And so, you know, as I said before, this is an administration who understands the importance of our schools, the value of our schools, and they have invested extremely well in our schools.
Thank you so much. That is Dr. Dietra Trent, the leader of the White House's initiative and commitment to historically Black colleges and universities, celebrating HBCU Week at the White House. Thank you so much, Dr. Trent, for your work and for sharing a little bit of you and the Biden-Harris administration's commitment to Black and brown folks with us this afternoon.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Take care. I just wanted to highlight a couple of the facts that Dr. Trent shared with us, because as I read through the briefing document, I was incredibly moved and impressed. HBCUs, and Dr. Trent mentioned these things, HBCUs produce an astonishing 40% of all Black engineers, 50% of Black teachers, 70% of Black doctors and dentists, and 80% of Black judges, and of course, the first Black female vice president and the first Black female that's going to be president of the United States.
Yeah, that's a pretty big resume there.
I would say, here's this. Research by the United Negro College Fund found that as compared to the Ivy League and other top-ranked non-HBCU institutions, HBCUs help more than five times as many students move from the bottom 40% to the top 60% of U.S. household income. About 30% of HBCU students move up at least two income quintiles compared to 18% of non-HBCUs. I mean, that is a huge, HBCUs help move people up the economic ladder.
It's almost like a hillbilly going to Harvard or Yale isn't as the actual story compared to what the real story of people
of color at HBCUs.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing, in case anybody's getting their undies in a twist out there. You don't have to be Black to go to an HBCU.
You do not.
Really good friend of mine from high school, ran cross country with him. White dude, tall, lanky white dude. He went to Howard.
Great.
I thought that was...
Howard's a great university. I'd like to go to Howard.
Coolest thing. Yeah. I went to an undergraduate institution. They paid me to go there. I'm deeply appreciative, but it was white, so white when I was there. It's still a challenge at many institutions of higher learning. And listen, just like nearly every Harvard Business School analysis has proven to date, the more diverse a board of directors is, the more diversity you get in, not just the boardroom, but up and down your workforce, both in leadership and your frontline workers, the higher the profits, the better the business does. And I believe education is always better when we've got a lot of different people in the classrooms coming together with the breadth of experience that folks from different backgrounds, different races, different socioeconomic backgrounds bring to the table. One of the reasons, I'll share this little story with you. I got into Boston College, as well as a number of very prestigious universities, Duke. And I visited these. My parents were very helpful. They helped me go check these places out because you got to get a feel for the campus. And versions of the story I'm about to share happened at a couple of these different universities. But what happened to me at Boston College was the most shocking because it was the most stark. And so when I talk about diversity, I don't just mean gender or sexual orientation, sexual identity, race, background. I also mean socioeconomically. Because this is what happened to me when I was visiting Boston College. And I did extremely well. But BC, back when I was entering college, was astoundingly expensive. It still is. And I was sitting in the student center waiting for my tour guide. Or one tour guide was there. We were waiting for the other one. And she said, do you have questions about BC? And I said, sure. What sort of both need and academically based scholarships, work, study, or other arrangements do you have on campus? What sort of support do you have for students that do have to balance work and study? Because my family wasn't in a position to be cutting big old fatty checks every year before we've even touched room and board and books and food. And she turned to me with the most puzzled of expressions on her face. And she said, I'm fairly certain we have programs for disadvantaged students. And I remember kind of looking at my dad like, well, what's this girl talking about? Disadvantaged. You are not disadvantaged if your family doesn't have $60,000, $70,000 in cash. You're normal. Like, that's normal.
Yeah.
You're advantaged beyond the reach of most of Americans if your family can't cut those types of checks. And her inability to see that her experience was privileged and extraordinary and offered her advantages that most of us could never dream of, yet alone cash in, and I mean that literally, told me all I needed to know about BC. It put me off of places like Duke, UNC, Chapel Hill, put me off Michigan as an out-of-stater, put me off the University of Chicago, because the price tags attached to this and the low percentage of kids that were there on some mix of both need-based aid, scholarship, Pell Grants, told me these were going to be, this was not going to be a classroom where a wealth of experience and viewpoint and lived differences were going to be brought to bear in how I learned economics or history or literature, because it impacts how you understand and relate to that information and how you test it or how you test each other's ideas. And to this day, I think that that is one of the greatest inhibiting factors. People talk about liberal elites. I go, we're talking about rich people elites. That's what we're actually talking about. I don't care if you're conservative or liberal or independent. You got 70, 80 large that you can cut a check to send your kid to whatever the best school they can get into is. That makes you an elite, not your politics. I guess my rant on that is over for this afternoon.
To add to that, you know, when I had my first black teacher when I was in college, and I thought I was kind of, you know, enlightened and whatnot. But it wasn't until he explained to me that when he had to have heart surgery and how hard it was for him to put his literal heart in a white man's hands. Yes. And how hard that was until I realized, wow, I really don't know anything, do I?
And to the texter from the 414 that said that HBCUs still suck. Well, then Ivy League schools suck more because they don't raise people out of lower income quartiles at the rate that HBCUs. They do not produce doctors and lawyers and dentists at the same rate that HBCUs do. They perpetuate wealth generationally, because what is Harvard? By Harvard graduates' admission, the most expensive networking event you will ever attend.